I want to make a distinction between a workshop and a kind of talk that we did upstairs or downstairs. I guess it was upstairs. You can't get any lower than this. But the distinction should be at the workshop, I really want to work with you for a few minutes and perhaps with each other. I want to say, I don't know everybody in this room. I know Rabbi Gluck is here, who's as big of a maven as I am in anything that I have to say. My biggest credential for speaking about Shidduchim is that my son got married a year ago. That was a true education in the whole process of Shidduchim, without any question. And just having to guide hundreds of Bali Tshuva in particular, first years ago through the process of they themselves getting married, and now through the process of their children getting married, which somehow, as much as the Bali Tshuva world has grown, the process of Shidduchim has become much more complicated, seems to me, much more complicated for everybody, not just for Bali Tshuva, for everybody, but there are certainly major complications for Bali Tshuva. And as is my derech here today, it's not always my derech, by the way, but today I've decided that I'm going to call a spade a spade. Let's just speak openly and try to accomplish what it is that we have to accomplish. What comes to mind as soon as I was asked to speak about Shidduchim for Bali Tshuva, what comes to mind is a phone call that I received about a year and a half ago. And my wife, who's here somewhere, comes from a family of Telzers. So, you know, her father, Linton Telz, her grandfather is one of the founders of Telz in America, Linton Telz in Lithuania. So it's like a Telzer family. So we had a connection with Telz and with the Rosh Hashiva, with Rav Gifter, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. So because of that, somebody called about a year and a half ago and asked me, they said this was in regard to a shidduch, so it's for a big toeles. Somebody read a shidduch between Rabbi Gifter's, Rabbi Gifter's granddaughter and his son. So, sounds good to me, right? Got a lot door. And I immediately thought, wow, you know, I wonder who your son is, right? Rabbi Gifter's granddaughter. So I said, okay, what do you want to ask me? So, do I know if Rav Gifter's parents were Shomer Shabbos? As Rabbi Horowitz would say, this is a true story. You know, and I thought to myself, Gival, you know, there's a Gemara that says, like, Shafkes Chaya L'chol Beria. Like, who can live? You know, I mean, was Rav Gifter's parents? The answer is, by the way, that after a lot of research, yes. In case anybody here wants to make a shit up.
How about the grandparents?
So we could sit here and we could analyze this, and I mean the story tells it all, because you know what can we say? What can we say? What can any of us say? Rabbi Akiva wouldn't have been able to make a shidduch today. Moshe Rabbeinu wouldn't have been able to make a shidduch today. Any of the people, Shmaya Vavtalion, wouldn't have been able to make shidduchim today. Who would have been able to make a shidduch today? Who would have made it? You know, nobody would have made it. So we're living in a very complex time for everybody. And then when you talk about, you know, about tshuva, it's like, you know, parents are about tshuva, so it becomes like that's in your face. You know, are they going to come to the chuppah, actually, the family, and what's going to happen? It becomes a very complicated thing, and people, unfortunately, or whatever it is, you know, we can analyze it, but we're not going to get anywhere by trying to analyze it, because we're not going to change this, I don't think. The metzius is, the way it is that there's an attitude in much, not all of, but in much of the mainstream yeshiva world, that there are standards that most human beings can't meet. And those standards are being put on us, and we're especially troubled if we have daughters and not sons, because if you have a son, somehow, I think maybe partially because the Chazon Ish writes that
Chazon Ish wrote an Igaris, which is well quoted, that if a boy learns in yeshiva and the Eish HaTorah goes through his system and he makes him over into a new person, then he doesn't need any yichus. Maybe that, or maybe just there's a shortage of boys. I don't know. Maybe that's what it is. Whatever it is, it's more difficult, it seems to me, just from my anecdotal experience, it seems like it's more difficult for girls than it is for boys. And you couple that with the situation that we have here, standards, which there are certain things we're not going to change. You know, we just can't change about our family. So what do we do? That's what I'm throwing on the floor for you today. Well, I didn't mean that. I meant, in other words, if somebody's mother didn't go to the mikveh, she didn't. You're not going to change it. That's all. You know, you can't be reborn. That's what I meant. You mean, can we change the attitude of the yeshiva? Well, I don't think we're going to do it today. You see, the problem is the changing the attitude. That might be easier. That would seem easier to change this.
But you see, we're all, it seems to me that to some degree, I mean, I'll speak for myself when I say we, I'm not including anybody but myself, not even my wife. But I think that we are part of the problem too, because we're Baal Teshuva, but maybe we don't want our children to marry a Baal Teshuva or a Baal Teshuva. So we're part of the problem too, to that degree. That we're categorizing people rather than getting
right.
to know individuals.
Possibly. But by the way, in terms of changing the world, whether it could be changed or couldn't be changed, again, it's out of the scope of this discussion, but, you know, Enochanami, I mean, you know, Yanki Horowitz should get up at the Aguda Convention and he should scream about this, maybe. You know, it's something that is talked about a lot, but it's going to be, it'll be years. I don't know if it'll work for our children. It'll be years before that's changed. So I want to try in the next few minutes to try to develop an attitude. If we can, try to come up with some practical etzes as to what to do. And most important, which I think is probably the most realistic, is to learn how to be careful with the ramifications of this environment that we're in, because I think that's really the key thing. And let me say that in simple English. Shiduchim are min hashamayim. The Gemara says, min haTorah, min haNeviim, min haKesuvim. It's all over the Tanakh. Me Hashem isha leish. This is all predestined. And if we would even think for a moment that we have an extra problem because we're Balei Tshuva or because we didn't go to this seminar or that yeshiva, it's actually kfira. May Hashem isha l'ish. Everything is bashert. That being said, there is a certain makom sakana which exists in being in the position that many of us are in, and that's really what I want to deal with. Number one, let me say the following, and this is controversial. The reason I know it's controversial is because I said this at an Aguda convention and it became a big controversy. So by definition of controversial. I alluded this morning when I spoke to the fact that many of the differences between Baalei Tshuva and lifers is cultural and not religious. And I believe that that's a very important part of our lives. So it means to say that there are certain good things and certain negative things and certain parv things that non-frum people, Americans, let's not even call them non-frum people, that Americans have grown up with. And they're very American. There are ideals that are very American to us. We saw this more than ever recently. I'm an American. I feel very American. I grew up in, you know, my father's an American, my grandmother's an American, and I can count back five generations American. I was listening on the radio, don't tell anybody, I was listening to the Yankee Stadium prayer service that was going on for the, you know, the day of prayer. Did anybody catch that? And personally, you know, I'll mention my chet in public. I love listening to Baptist ministers speak. I just think they're like it. I just think it's great. But whenever I can, I try to catch it.
But it was the Hindu guy didn't do it for me, but the Baptists, I just like something special, you know. You know, it's an interesting thing. I was very moved by the display of patriotism, of the achdus of the American community. I was very moved by the visual. I didn't even see it because I was listening on the radio, but I was imagining it. The announcer kept on saying that as somebody was singing, you know, everybody are sitting there, they're hugging strangers next to them, and it was beautiful. And it moved me to tears. I thought it was a very, very beautiful thing. I presented this to somebody in my house that same night. I said, you know, it was such a moving thing. And he looked at me like I came from the, like how could you even, first of all, how could you listen to it? Second of all, even if you listen to it, how could you keep it on? But if you turn it on, and how could you be moved by it? You know, I could tell you that when the whole September 12th, I hung up a flag outside of my house. So as far as I know, I think I was the first from Jew and Muncie to hang up. You had one September 12th? Okay, that's why we're friends.
What time?
On September 13th, the flag was stolen. September 13th, the flag was stolen. And I didn't know what to do. Should I call the police? And it became like a game of capture the flag. It was like a really interesting thing. We had different suspects, and was it a religious crime? Was it a hate crime? Was it a terrorist in our neighborhood? We couldn't figure out what this was. I still don't know what it is. I have my suspicions. I hung up another flag the next day, and it's still there. It's still there, and I put up a sign saying "under surveillance." this way.
Everybody will want to already stolen.
Yeah, no, but what I'm trying to, it obviously bothered somebody that the rabbi has a flag hang up, and then probably now everybody has flags on the cars and everything, so it became okay. You know, even though Gouda said everybody should put up a flag, but at the beginning it was controversial. The first day it was controversial. Am I right? It was controversial the first day. What I'm trying to bring out is that this has nothing to do with religion. I don't think. I mean, you might be able to find a medrash someplace or some kind of a sefer that talks about hanging up flags of the country that you live in. I don't think so. I think this is strictly a cultural thing. And because of this cultural difference, I being the American in this case, other people thinking, and somebody even got up in Muncie and gave a whole speech about how it's usher to hang up a flag. They spoke to the girls in Beis Yaakov. It's usher to hang up a flag. This is what the Jews did, the nationalists did in Germany before the war, and that's the Gedolim said that brought the Holocaust, and boom, you know. So all of a sudden I'm making a Holocaust, you know. But this is a cultural difference. Now I ask you the following biting question, and this is just obviously one small example, but there are hundreds of examples that go from baseball to all types, to the way we dress, to the way we talk, to the things that we're interested in, to the hobbies that we have, to physical fitness. There's all kinds of examples of cultural differences between the lifer community and the American community. And the American community, I believe, even if you become a Baal Tshuva and you take upon yourself all of the religious, every chumrah in the world, you're keeping Chalav Yisrael, you're not eating Chadash, the whole thing, is still not going to change your culture. So there is a cultural difference. You might try to change your culture, but I think that comes out weird. That works kind of against you when you try to change your culture. So I ask this question, is it a good shidduch? Is it a good shidduch between a Baal Tshuva, I'm talking now about a child of a Baal Tshuva, I'm talking about a Baal Tshuva and an FFB? You're bringing two cultures together. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a Baal Tshuva and an FFB. Now, I had asked this question at an Aguda convention, and I suggested that possibly in certain cases, a Baal Tshuva should marry a Baal Tshuva. That's what I suggested. Boy, did I get it. I've got involved in such controversy, but I tell you something. 15 years later, I believe it's been 15 years since they invited me to speak at the Aguda convention. 15 years later, more than ever, I believe that people of different cultures should not get married. And whether those cultures are Japanese and Chinese, or whether those cultures are Australians and Americans, I'm not saying always. There are many Americans that are very European.
you know, there are many. But generally, if two people are strong in their culture, I don't know that it makes for a perfect shidduch. I think that there's a lot of problems with it. And then when you talk about the Baal Tshuva culture and you talk about the FFB culture, you have a very big dichotomy there, which we have to be careful for. Now, this doesn't talk about the children. We have to talk about that in a second. But I just wanted to put this down as a yesod. Yeah.
Baruch Hashem.
I
certainly don't want to make any problems.
No, I'm going to say that it would have been a problem had there not been a place of connection. My husband, it was also quite a normal Baal Tshuva. He tried to settle very much into a normal way of life. And I felt I was in a normal way of life, but most of my friends were Baal Tshuvas. And there was some connection, and there was some sensitivity on both sides. I think when there is openness and some form, some place to connect, it could work very well. But otherwise, I understand what you're saying, and it could help you.
Right. I'm certainly, by the way, not saying that it can't work, and I'm certainly would do everything in my power to help it work if that's what happened, if they got married. I'm only saying that it's not necessarily something that we should jump into. Again, talking about the parent generation now, I'm not talking about the child generation.
It seems to me that there's, you know, the cultural milieu of the home. But then my daughter went to seminary for a year, and she came back, and I don't think she's changed, maybe she's changed for the better, but she came with expectations regarding a maid that I don't even think are who she is. Now she's but I do think it's but she came, so I think that you even have to throw that the daughter I sent to seminary, in certain respects, not the daughter I got back from seminary.
That could happen
either. You
think it's
worse? Well, I didn't say she was worse. I don't know that she wants a full mother. I don't think she knows what she wants, but she has these. I don't think what she wants exists.
Let's analyze this together for just another moment. Let me just take it a step further. And this is, by the way, I hope this is important to you. It's very important to me because this is something that I'm faced with tens of people, and it's something that I think about a lot. And I really do want to refine the thinking in this area. But if we're going to be, we have to be very straight and very honest and very emistic here. If we have a case here of a husband and wife that are Baalei Tshuva, and in a standard case became frum in college and, you know, got married, maybe they even knew each other before, and decided to lead a Torah life, and brought up their children in the regular Muncie Pesach kind of, you know, world. You know, if you're a Muncie, like you did the Beis Mikra thing, let's say, you know, whatever the comparable schools are. Are our children, being very truthful, are our children growing up the same way as somebody who's a child of an FFB? Are they or are they not, from a cultural point of view? Absolutely not.
My children think they are. I may not think they are. I don't think they feel.
Okay, but they're wrong. But they're wrong, is it?
The
fact of the matter is, and I would say mostly, Either a growing up in a Baal Tshuva house, first of all, they have usually different types of grandparents than everybody else has. They have different uncles and aunts than everybody else has, different cousins. Second of all, parents that are Baalei Tshuva generally have, for instance, a different way of taking a vacation, just as an example, than people who grew up in Burr Park have. I mean, I know that, you know, when I walk into like a bungalow colony and people tell me I'm on vacation, why would anybody come here to go on vacation? It doesn't make any, you know, it's like a jail, you know, why would anybody do this? I don't, you know, pay money for it and leave beautiful homes. It doesn't make any sense. But if you're in that culture, it somehow makes sense because the culture is a culture of leaving your kids run around and you know, yeah, all that kind of stuff. So it's a whole different culture. How People from the secular world, it's like to in certain areas, it's kind of unthinkable, for instance, to leave a child alone in the house for even 15 minutes. It's like, you know, you call the police if you find out somebody did that. That's not the case in the from world for very practical reasons. I mean to generalize, but I mean to a great extent, it's not the case in the from world. It's, you know, like, what are you going to do? I have 17 children. I can't possibly be home every second. So you leave, what do you mean? I left it with a 6-year-old. What's the problem? So you have, again, I'm not saying what's right or what's wrong. I'm just saying that you have cultural differences, and the children did grow up with cultural differences. So I just want to throw this out that I question, in my mind, I question whether, I think it's a new culture. I don't think it's the same culture, perhaps, that we grew up with, like the 60s culture. It's a new culture called children of Bali Tshuva. And it's very possible that the ideal shidduch, I'm not saying the only shidduch, the ideal shidduch should be children of Bali Tshuva. I think that would really be the best. That I think it would be a great idea if somebody started this website, or whatever is kosher, to create children of children. Because not just because they'll accept each other, because that really works for me. Yeah.
I like what you said about the culture, and I would say it's not so much BT versus FFB, but European
absolutely
versus.
I hope I made myself clear on that. Yeah.
So, for instance, I grew up traditional in Montreal, where there are Hungarian bakeries, Yiddish all over the streets. I've lived in Texas, I've lived in Florida, and I've lived in Flatbush, and I feel I can relate to from people in Flatbush. I have more in common with them than an assimilated Jew in Texas.
Because they're Hungarians.
Because maybe, not to say that, you know, who maybe went to a Reformed temple, because the Yiddish, like, I have friends whose parents are Holocaust survivors. I've heard my grandparents speak Yiddish, and therefore, somebody once said to me they can understand why me being from Montreal feels so at home in New York, because there is that, like, as Montreal is like the New York of Canada, and so it's more like a European.
And that is exactly. I'm happy you clarify that. Is it has very little to do with religion. I moved to Australia. I was very successful in Australia. I mean, I had hundreds of people come. Literally, I would give a shear. I mean, Australia is like crazy with numbers. I would say, I'm giving a shear, 400 people would come to the shear. You know, what are these people, nuts? Part of me here in Buffalo, I was struggling to get 3 people to listen to what I had to say. All of a sudden, I have 400 people coming to the shear. But you know what? I couldn't live there. I couldn't stay in Australia. It was a different culture. I just couldn't live there. It was driving me nuts. They're wonderful people, they're generous people, they're good people. And you wouldn't know the difference, by the way, unless you really lived there. You wouldn't cop it, you know, but they're still different. They eat differently, they spend money differently, they think differently. And it would be, I'm not saying in all cases, it would be a terrible shidduch. So I want to, one of the things I want to introduce today is cultural compatibility. That's my yesod aleph, yeah. Yes.
One thing my 11-year-old daughter came up with, which I thought was, besides what you're talking about, I was landing. I just figured something out. All the girls in my class who are terrified of cats, they don't go skiing either.
There you go. Isn't that a perfect example, though? Can I share with
you?
Let me share with you a real story. And I don't want to waste your time with stories, because this is like such a. There was. There's a Rosh Yeshiva from Paris who came very chashuva Rosh Yeshiva. And he came to Yerushalayim. This is when I had just gotten married. I was married a couple of weeks. And he said to me, he flattered me when he said, "You're married, darn it." He says, "I just came to find a chassan for my daughter, and I was really thinking about you." That's what he said. So I always, I don't know if it's true or not, but I always like him. So he said to me, "I need to find a shidduch for my daughter." He had a beautiful daughter. So I said to him, I'm going to introduce you to the most chashuva person in the yeshiva. And I did. I did exactly this. Now, this was a person, a man who today, 23 years later, is a Rosh Yeshiva. So I was right. He's a chashuva person. He's tall, dark, and handsome. He's wealthy. I mean, this is like a melech. You know, he was a melech. And this girl deserved a melech. I introduced him. And not a Baal Tshuva, by the way. Not a Baal Tshuva. So they went out. And it worked famously. Now, this was a French girl and an American
American boy learning in Israel. Right? So they went out. They spoke for hours. They went out a second time. They went out a third time. The parents were waiting there in Yerushalayim to see whether something's going to happen with the shidduch, and they were thanking me. It's going so well. And he talked to him and learning, and it's wonderful, and this and that. So he said, finally, we got to the point we're going to meet the parents. The parents had made Aliyah. They were living in Tel Aviv, the boy's parents. So I was very excited about this. I was married a week. I already made a shidduch. It was exciting. It was very exciting. Maybe I was going to get a bracha, a bit of chuppah. But it was really, really exciting stuff. The next morning, I see this Rosh Yeshiva in Yerushalayim. He says, Shidduch Zah. So I said, Gevald, what happened? We must have had a dispute with the parents, or they had a major hashkafic fight or something. What happened? So he said to me, what happened is as follows. He went with his wife. He's a very European, right? You know, he went with his wife. They went to Tel Aviv. They found the address. They went up to the apartment, apartments to the fourth floor. They knocked on the door. And as they knocked on the door, they heard the dog start barking. The dog started barking. He looked at his wife, he told me. His wife looked at him. And they called off the shidduch. Simple as that. They didn't even meet the parents. The wife said to the Rebbetzin, said to the Reshiva, first of all, we have to be polite. We have to meet the parents. And second of all, maybe we're wrong. Maybe we're overreacting. So I thought, somebody has some seichel. They're overreacting. So they met the parents. They walked out being pretty sure that they weren't overreacting, but they decided that they're in Tel Aviv. They're going to go to Bnei Brak and ask Rav Shach his opinion. Okay, so these were people, the Vakshay Tyre. They went into Rav Shach, this was 20 some years ago. They went into Rav Shach, they told Rav Shach the story, he went up, the Shidduch is working brilliantly, this is a big Ben Tyre and a big Bas Tyre, and everything's great. We knocked on the door, we heard the dog barking. Before we finish telling the story, Rav Shach says, Mishkin Shidduch. I got so angry. Rav Shach called off the shidduch even before they said their opinion, just because the dog was barking. I got so angry. I got so angry at where Rav Shach, and where is he coming from, and what's with the dog, and this is so prejudiced, and this is so narrow-minded. Everything that everybody's thinking, I was thinking, and plus more, and I was young and angry at the time. You want to know something? I think Rav Shach is right. I think they were right. He was saying, he started to argue with me, Gemara is this Rosh Yeshiva. I'm a Gadol Kelev V'Toch Beisek, Gadol Chazir. It's got nothing to do with Gemara. It has nothing to do with dogs. It's a cultural difference. The point was that it's not going to work. Just like there's a dog, there's 100 other Americanisms which are considered a dog is a man's best friend. Go tell that to somebody who grew up in Lita. A dog is a man's best friend. It's a ridiculous, it's a ridiculous thing for somebody to understand unless you really grew up watching Lassie. It's not going to work. It's just not going to happen. So this cultural difference is really there. Let me just say, because he's going to come in and tell me to stop saying, let me just say one or two things, and then I'm happy to let you talk as much as you want. I think that there is, all this being said, I think there is something very terrible that happens. Two parts of it. One is, I think when it comes to shidduchim, people see children as Balei Tshuva, and this is very erroneous and very unfair, but it is a fact that we have to watch out for. They see it as some type of a disability. And more than a stigma, a disability. But I'll tell you what I mean by that is that the way it works is, it's really stupid, the system, is that, he's extremely obese, but for you it's good enough because you're a children of Balei Tshuva. She has ADD, but he's a Balei Tshuva, so what do you want? And this kind of having to settle is I want to tell you first, besides for it being wrong and unfair, and if somebody should speak it at a convention, this is what they should speak about. I want to say to you that nobody should settle ever. That's a ridiculous, notion. And this is our children, and you have to do research, and you have to make sure that they're not settling. And the worst part about this, I said there's two parts. The worst part is that it has been known to have been said to boys and girls in yeshivas and in seminaries who are children of Balei Tshuva, that you must be aware that your parents are Balei Tshuva. I don't want to hurt anybody, I'm just telling you the truth. That your parents are Balei Tshuva, so you may have to settle when it comes to shidduchim. And this is a horrible thing to say to a child, and it should never be said, and it should never be, and it should never be made true. But being that this is for better or for worse, and it's worse, being that this is, there is this aspect of culture in our society. What I do want to say is that you have to, I caution you to be as careful as everyone has to be when somebody talks about a shidduch. As Balei Tshuva, you have to be that much more careful. You have to almost say to yourself, not to get paranoid, but you have to almost say, you know, is there a but here? Is there is there some kind of a catch? You know, and it's a horrible thing to say. I feel terrible saying it, but I feel it's my duty to say it. And the way you have to do this, for those of you who have not yet been through the process, is you have to get references, and then you have to find your own references, and you have to ask very, very strong questions. You know, the other thing that bothers me is that, and you got to keep this in mind though, that people have a heter for everything. You know, if you want a heter, there's a heter for everything. So people lie. It's a terrible thing, but people lie. I was just involved in a case this morning with a boy who was thrown out of a yeshiva because he's a terribly corrupting influence to everybody in the class, and it's a terrible thing. So I said, listen, he's going to another yeshiva. We should tell them, right? Does that make sense to you? We should tell them before they accept him that he's going to be he's got a bad record. So we got a psak that we don't have to say anything. Shei Baltas. Okay. So I'm not going to argue with the psak. All I'm saying is, we have to know that there are these psukim out there. So everybody has a heter for something, which means that we have to be very astute in our research. And you have to ask very hard questions from the right people. You have to ask the hard questions when somebody is to get references and say, does the person, you have to find out, is the person that you're recommending, have they ever taken medications for mental disorders? You have to ask who the first grade teacher, the second grade teacher, the third grade teacher, where you really have to go much deeper into it and not rely on a system of everything will be okay because this is from world and everybody's nice. Again, it pains me to say this, and I hope that Hashem forgives me, because I certainly don't want to say anything bad about the Jewish people. I'm only saying that we have to be careful. That's all I'm saying. Yeah.
I'm a little confused now as to how I, as a parent, you know, make the right judgments. Because my feeling would be that I'm interested in the person as they are now and their potential, though I might like to know their history. What if I have history? Is that a reason for rejecting someone?
I'm not saying
that. If someone took medication for hyperactive or ADHD or for depression at some point in their life, maybe they're even going to have to be on it for their whole life. Does that mean that person is not going to be a good spouse?
Please don't understand for me that I'm saying that they shouldn't be.
What I'm saying is, once you've got the information,
because there are pieces of information that for every person is their breaking point. And you have to know what that is. If it doesn't bother you, and it wouldn't bother me, I don't think, because it's right. I'm not saying that, but you don't know what's lurking there. And I'm having a hard time getting these words out, but especially when we're dealing with Balei Tshuva, people tend to be more heter and say, well, this is good enough. I want to tell you something else, a different cultural difference. You know, in the frum world, a shidduch is still, to a certain extent, a business deal, as opposed to in the in America, where it's not a business deal, it's a romance. It's we're going to build a life together. Now all of that is true in Yiddishkeit too, once they meet, and maybe between the couple. But from the families and the mechutanim point of view, there's a very, very big business aspect to this, and you got to know how to deal this business. Like everything becomes a negotiation, and everything you have to take lessons in playing poker. hold a straight face and say numbers, and it's a whole thing. Now, again, this is the reality of the situation. All this being said, please don't misunderstand me. All this being said, there are wonderful boys out there, and there are wonderful girls out there, and they can build beautiful bayis namun b'Yisrael. I'm just saying things that sometimes we have to be cautious about, and specifically, again, the cultural items that are out there.
Just want to say to you that this is
have anything to check out. I think that what you've spoken before, that when you can get a rug that gets it, the Shalchanim don't get it, and most of them have no idea what kind of shidduch. Even the ones to Lakewood, the L&L to Lakewood, the things I don't want to say, but they're wonderful people and they try very hard. They just don't get who these children are. These are regular from children who have talked to the parents. And we need a resource. Where do we go? Who do we call? I call Shalcharim. I have a 20-year-old daughter. I call Shalcharim. She wants a learning board. She went to a very, very firm seminary. She wants that straight path. Where do we go for this? Those firm people, those yeshivish people, they're not interested really in us.
I wish I would be supplied with the names of...
I'm a volunteer chef. I'm with the Refine organization. There are people, I'll see my son, but there are good learning boys or good from boys who come from a similar background. Who've been making from since their whole lives, you know, and went to those kind of yeshivas, but maybe... The parents could relate to each other better. I mean, there is such a thing. I could maybe try and help you because I don't know if I have the exact answer, but maybe I could ask for you.
The truth is, I mean, I'm just out of respect for your question. I mean, I do want to go home and research exactly who does this, but. You know, because it's a very, very important question. And there's no reason in the world, and this is really what I want to say, there's no reason in the world if your daughter wants to marry a learner and a guy who learned to bris, no reason why she shouldn't, you know.
I mean, I called a shotgun who deals a lot with Balei Tshuva, thinking, well, maybe it knows a lot about Balei Tshuva for 20 years, maybe he knows some children of Balei Tshuva, but it was he also didn't have that. He knew from the 25-year-olds and the 30-year-old Balei Tshuva, but didn't understand.
Really, because my suspicion is that you might be looking in the wrong places. I mean, I know such boys, you know. I shouldn't have said that. There goes the day. But I mean, there are boys from similar backgrounds that are in Brisk and in Mir and in Slobodka, and no, you know, that it's not a question of would tolerate a Baal Shuvah or not, but are compatible with. There's that compatibility. I just wouldn't get so frustrated if it's not the lifers, because I don't know if that's the ideal thing anyway. That's all I'm saying.
That's, I think that a lot of firm people delude themselves into thinking that they really can fit in with FSCs in this area. Like, they have some vision in their head that because their kid was brought up as an FSC, that their kid is going to marry an FSC and they're going to be integrated through that system. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't see that happening. And I think a lot of people being potentially very disappointed, our generation of people being very disappointed about that and frustrated over that.
You're worse than me. But again, let me remind you of the story of Rav Gifter. You're right, because people say, my kid went through this from birth. But, you know, people are worried, and this is not a mishigas. I mean, it might be a mishigas, but it's a real mishigas. People are worried about parents and grandparents. Today, everybody's worried about grandparents, because when we were kids, grandparents were very old people. You know, today, grandparents are not old people any longer. Grandparents are part of the family. Something has changed over the last 20, 30 years. Maybe I got older. So... We're finished.
They're worried about the grandparents having a bad influence.
Right. In other words, it's common. I'll serve as an ambassador from the FFB world. It is common amongst fathers of briskers, let's say, or to be concerned that the grandparents of the proposed girl went to the mikveh. Grandparents. So, you know, so it used to be like a big deal that this child is a mikveh child. You know, that was a big deal. It's not a big deal. That's not it any longer. I'm not saying everywhere, but there is this mentality. You know, and my advice is, so you know what? It's not for you. It's not for you. Don't get frustrated by it. Don't get upset by it. They are approximately 0.001% of the population of the United States of America. But it's not for you. There are more people that are not concerned about those things. But the shadchan that is going to bring from you from those people are going to find a boy that has a problem.
That's what's going to happen. You understand what I'm saying to you? You're going to find a boy that has a problem. Whereas if you look in the more, whatever you want to call it, world, you won't have that type of a trade-off that takes place.
What you're saying is your parents
will
go to the
mixer,
your mother will go to the
mixer,
your grandfather,
you might as well
buy a dog.
May as well get a dog already, right? You want to get a dog?
Yeah. But if you want it,
when I went to Australia, so I bought a cat. The reason I bought a cat is because the house I moved into had mice. So I bought a cat, you know. So, I worked for the Lakewood Kailul in Australia as the director of outreach. So like a day or two after I moved in, so the Reish Kailul comes into the house together with, I don't know if you ever heard of Mr. Gutnick, who was like a big millionaire in Australia, and they both came to meet me. To see the new, who's this Rabbi Haber? And so they walk into the house, and the cat jumps from the mantelpiece onto Gutnick's shoulder. and they went berserk. They went berserk. So I said, I don't know, like I'm gonna use. I came to the house and I had a cat. The house came with a cat. I can't get rid of it now. Cat and mice, and it's like a whole Zganachayot over here. I'm telling you, I almost lost my job. I have to really think quick on my feet, not to look. What is it? So somebody will tell you a cat is tamei and you forget Torah and kashya l'shikcha. This is not the issue. The issue is that there's a cultural difference. It's as simple as that. I don't know what to do because I'm supposed to end. But I wish everybody hatzlacha, and I'd like to dance at everybody's chasana.